So quiet and well behaved. We are wrapping up our series on the season of light today with the winter solstice, which is the reason all these festivals came about. Solstice means the sun stands still, and that's how it appeared to ancient people. For us, the exact moment that we in Texas will be tilted away from the sun, farthest away from the sun, will be 10:59 p.m. Tuesday this week. And when the sun comes up on Wednesday, the day will be a couple minutes longer. The light will last a little longer and a little longer until June when, you know, it goes down at 8:30 or 9. The light always returns. It has been celebrated around the world for thousands of years. Because light is life. When people had no clocks and no calendars, the sun guided them. They could figure out how much winter was left so they could ration their food. They could figure out when to breed animals and plant crops. They watched the sun, and many of them worshipped it for its life-giving power. We call those early celebrations pagan, but that's not the same as godless. It seems human beings have always honored and felt connected with a greater power. No matter what they called it or believed it was, human civilization has always acknowledged a presence that sustains us, a force, the force. On this weekend, when the force awakens, did you know that Star Wars movie is expected to make $250 million this weekend? We are in the wrong business. But I want to say, at the risk of magical thinking, that the Force is actually an excellent description of the God we talk about in Unity, the transcendent God that is all things. It is this nameless power, a mystery, a principle or law, a power, a force available for our use. And human beings have always known it. They've always tried to commune with the force. They've always been seeking the light. And I can back this up with Charles Fillmore. Fillmore's the co-founder of Unity, who wrote about the force in his last book, Adam's Smashing Power of Mind, published in 1949. And Unity has turned a passage from that book into a one-minute video that I want to play for you, and I'll read it in case you can't read it from where you are and for the people online. The scriptures of all the nations of the world testify to the existence of an invisible force. Not all agree as to the character of this omnipresent force, universal spirit, but it serves the purpose of being their God under whatever name it may appear. Not only the scriptures that we look to for authority in our daily living, but also the experience of ourselves and our neighbors proves that those who communicate with the God within, become conscious of the guiding light. Call it what you will. So, what has become clear in this series, and we've covered Hanukkah, Advent, Christmas, is that people just make up stories to justify a celebration in the middle of the winter. Okay, well, the stories might actually have happened, but they assign the stories to the celebration the way Jesus' birthday was assigned to the pagan solstice celebration. The Romans honored the god Saturn. They had Saturnalia. We talked about that last week. The Egyptians honored the rebirth of Ra, the sun god. The Celts believed King Arthur was born on the winter solstice. The Jewish Talmud recognizes the solstice. China has a solstice festival called Dongji, where families get together and eat. It's a big holiday. Dongji means the extreme of winter. At Stonehenge in England, which is 4,000 or 5,000 years old, the stones are aligned with the solstice sun. Pagans still go there to chant and dance and sing. In fact, it's one of the few days a year that the gates are open and you can actually get close to the stones. In Scandinavia, they called it Yule, J-U-L, which became our Yule, Y-U-L-E. It means wheel, circle of life, the year rolls around. They feasted for 12 days. Feasts were incorporated into these winter celebrations because they had so much food on hand. Not only the fall harvest, but they often felt they had to kill some of their livestock because they couldn't feed them all winter. So they had a glut of meat. The solstice is a carnivore's holiday. I'm looking at you. It was also, and I won't look at anyone on this one, it was also a time when the wine and beer that had been made during the year, they were finally fermented and ready to drink. So you can see they celebrated with whatever was on hand. The other thing they had on hand was evergreens, trees that stayed green all winter, proving life continues, even in the dark and cold. An evergreen wreath on a door symbolizes the continuity of life and the wheel of the year. Red, green, and white are druid colors. Those were the colors they saw in winter. Holly with the red berries, ivy, evergreen boughs, pine cones were what they had to decorate with. Holly was believed to have magical power because it could survive the winter. But mistletoe means all heal. It was believed to have miraculous healing power because it would hold the soul of its host tree. Host tree may be a euphemism. Mistletoe is a parasite. Mistletoe doesn't grow on the ground. It doesn't have roots. It grows in the branches of trees and survives on the life force of that tree. But because that's so different from other plants, you can imagine it was thought to be magical. Even enemies who met in the forest under mistletoe would lay down their arms for a day. Cutting down the mistletoe became a ritual in itself. They would use a golden sickle. And it was hung over doorways as a symbol of goodwill and peace to all comers. Of course, the Christians didn't like it. So mistletoe was banned for centuries as a pagan practice until the Victorians revived it as a symbol of love, romance, and good luck. They're the ones who started kissing under the mistletoe. Or that's one version. Let me tell you another one, the Viking story of mistletoe. The Vikings originally considered mistletoe to be poisonous and bad. The Vikings had a god named Balder. He was the god of the summer sun. And Balder had a dream that he died. He told his mother, Frigga, the goddess of love and beauty, and she was alarmed because if the sun died, so would all the life on earth. So Frigga went to all of the elements, air, fire, water, earth, and to all of the animals and all the plants and asked them to spare her son to make sure no harm came to him, if only in their own best interest. And then she relaxed. Her son would live forever. But Balder had one enemy, Loki, the god of evil. And Loki found one plant that Frigga had overlooked, mistletoe, growing in the trees above her. Loki made a poison-tipped arrow with the mistletoe and then tricked Balder's blind brother, Hodur, into shooting an arrow that killed Balder. The sun was dead. For 3 days, the earth grew dark, the skies poured rain. Air, water, earth, and fire tried to bring Balder back to life, but they couldn't. Finally, Frigga, his loving mother, was able to revive him. And the legend says that the tears she shed during those terrible 3 days turned into the white berries on the mistletoe plant. In her joy at Balder's resurrection, she reversed mistletoe's poisonous reputation, kissed everyone who passed beneath the tree on which it grew, And then a decree went out that anyone passing beneath mistletoe should have a token kiss and no harm would befall them. Okay. A loving mother with a divine son who is a god. He is killed and after 3 days is resurrected. These stories have been told over and over in different cultures with different names. So what does the winter solstice mean to us? I mean, we have Christmas coming, a big celebration. What do we do with solstice just a couple days before? Were any of you at Kit's solstice ceremony Wednesday night?
Yeah.
That was exactly the spirit of solstice. The music was beautiful, and what's amazing is that it was created in the moment. There was Kit on the piano and a cello and a harp and a guitar, right? And then singing bowls. And they were making it up as they went along. It was a long meditation. It was a feeling of quietude and reflection. Not somber, just becoming quiet, gathering in. And then we went out in the darkness and became the first group to walk our resurrected labyrinth. No one told us to walk in silence, but we did. It was dark and cold and beautiful. Stars were just beautiful. You know, there are still pagans, some of you. There's a pagan writer named Thorne Coyle who said the winter solstice is a chance to still ourselves inside, to behold the glory of the cosmos, and to take a breath with the sacred. We can take this time to stand still, as the sun appears to do. We can affirm in the darkest times that light is always with us, that new life is possible. There's always a resurrection, a new day. But today and tomorrow, the year is drawing to a close. Darkness envelops us. And as much as we celebrate light, let's also acknowledge darkness. This has been a tough year for so many of you. Surprising illnesses and some deaths. Remember this summer when 5 of our men were in the hospital at the same time? They are all back with us now. But I know some of you lost friends who weren't old and weren't sick. And this week the church lost Jill Honor. Some of you remember her. She sat right over here with her husband, John, who's in the back somewhere. You might remember her kids, Courtney and Eric, these beautiful blonde teenagers, who created a business called Not So Creepy Critters. And they went around to schools and other groups and talked about spiders and snakes. They're almost grown now. Jill's service will be here Wednesday at 2 o'clock. There's so much happening on the planet that appears to be loss, that appears unfair. We always knew this would be a time of great shift. That may be why so many of us wanted to be here. It's darkness and light. Yes, terrorism, but also spiritual awakening. Yes, death, but also health. We live in darkness and light always. Sometimes one or the other predominates in our personal universes. There are two ways to think about the darkness in our lives, and I haven't sorted this out. They might both be true. One is that all human hardship is man-made. In the absolute realm of the divine, there is no sickness, death, terrorism, or fear. The Old Testament says, God's eyes are too pure to behold evil. God doesn't even see it. It's only going on down here because we created it. God does not visit hardship on us for our own good or growth. God is an energy of love, light, and intelligence available for our use. God is a presence we have always known and have found so many ways to commune with so many names, stories, and rituals attached to it. This presence, this force we call God, is only good, so it could provide only good for us. And anything unlike the nature of the divine is man-made, temporary, and doesn't have to be part of our experience. As we master our own divine consciousness, we should experience more light, love, and good in our human lives. That's one way to look at the darkness. The other way to look at it is that because we're human, there will always be hardship and difficulty. Death, illness, fear, and violence are just part of the experience. We're here to integrate ourselves as spiritual beings with this human realm. We don't always handle it well, but that's how we learn and grow. Increasingly, I'm reading people who believe that our difficulties are our own karmic energy returning to us. Remember, Jesus said the measure you give is the measure you get back? Not necessarily immediately, but that karma is the energy coming back to us, not as punishment, but to be transmuted. This time we can choose to use that energy some other way, to turn the other cheek, to love our enemies. I heard spiritual writer Mark Nepo the other day describe life and its difficulties as being like H2O. You know, water is made of two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. You can't have the H2 without the O, or vice versa. At least not if you want water. So if water represents life, he said, we have to take both elements, what we call good and what we call bad. In this view, good and bad are what we came for, to see whether we could bring love and light to this dense, troubled planet. Knowing that we would encounter challenges that gave our souls exactly what they needed to grow. If we didn't know darkness, we wouldn't recognize light. I don't know how it all works, which of those two views is more nearly accurate, or why. Whether it could all be good, it's supposed to all be good, or whether hardship is a necessary part of the experience. I do know that celestial events like solstice and equinox and eclipses are a good time to take stock and to set intentions. Get quiet, reflect on where you've been, where you are, and where you want to go. This is what we'll do next week. At the end of the calendar year, we'll have our burning bowl and white stone ceremonies during this service. If you haven't done that before, what we do is write down on paper whatever we want to leave behind in the old year, and at the end of the service, we go outside and burn it up in a fire. We also listen for a word of guidance that will take us through the coming year, and we write that word on a white stone. But the year really ends 9 or 10 days before the calendar year ends. This Tuesday is when the days dwindle down into darkness, then the light is reborn. So is there anything in your life that's coming to a close? Anything you would like to release into the darkness? Or anything you'd like to bring back to life, to see rebirthed? What does the light represent to you? It's the birth of light we celebrate at Christmas. We'll light candles on Christmas Eve to represent the divine light in each of us, Thursday night. A Christian poet in the 1600s, Angelus Silesius, said, Christ could be born 1,000 times in Bethlehem, but all is in vain until he's born in me. It's that spiritual birth, that spark of light in the darkness, that makes this time of year so powerful. So let's take those thoughts into meditation with Kit.
So let's begin by making sure that our feet are flat on the floor. We're sitting balanced in our chair. Maybe setting down anything that you might be holding in your lap. Breathing deeply. Gently closing your eyes if you haven't already. and we move into this slightly darkened room. And we go within. Find our inner light. So as your breathing returns to normal, allow your focus to be on your inner light. God surrounds you. The light of God is expressing as you. Expanding from your heart center swirling about your body out into this room out into the world. To the other worlds. Consciousness back to this space. to the here and now. Fully present as you, as God. And join me in anchoring your light. With a big deep breath and full voices in the Alleluia. Alleluia.